Hi, I'm Beta Hill, and this is The D Word, the show where we talk dementia. Happy New Year from us here on The D Word, and looking forward to another 12 months of dementia talk and music. To kick things off in 2023, my guest this week is Carol B. Amos, a dementia campaigner and author from Delaware. And Carol will be joining me right after Alan Jackson.
Rocky burned up the movie screen. I was turning 17. Tie-dye shirts and Levi jeans, looking cool at the Dairy Queen, trying to impress a young woman in her Sunday dress. That was 1976. Didn't know who I was yet. A pretty little blonde-haired girl stole my heart and changed my world. Two kids and a moonlit sky, little love on a Friday night. Built a fire that just won't quit. That was 1976. High school days I packed away, set my sights on a bigger stage. Jimmy Carter moved to D.C., a Georgia boy just like me. Life seemed easy, nothing much that we needed. That was 1976, didn't know who I was yet. A pretty little blonde-haired girl stole my heart and changed my world. Two kids and a moonlit sky, little love on a Friday night. Built a fire that just won't quit. That was 1976. Track tapes were still in style, and Elvis was still alive. Wonder Woman sure looked fine. Bionic Man was still prime time. And that girl I liked, we kept on trying till we got it right. That was 1976. Didn't know who I was yet. Pretty little blonde-haired girl stole my heart and changed my world. Two kids and a moonlit sky, a little love on a Friday night. Built a fire that just won't quit. That was 1976. Yeah, that was 1976. Didn't know who we were yet. Built a fire that just won't quit. That was 1976. We built a fire that just won't quit. That was 1976.
Nineteen 1976, a long, hot summer for me. 3 weeks in Ireland when it didn't rain a drop. Alan Jackson kicking off the D Words in fine style this week. And we're going across the Atlantic to meet my guest, Carol B. Amos. Carol is a dementia campaigner, an author, whose interest in dementia started when her mother began having memory problems.
Yes, and actually went back before then because it sort of runs in our family. So she wasn't the first in our family to experience dementia. But so we sort of knew, you know, what to look out for. And it turned out she was living alone. She was a widow. And I was on the East Coast of the United States. My brother was on the West Coast, and I had another brother in Ohio, but about 4 hours away. And we started to notice certain things. So on her, you know, how she was interpreting things. She'd read one thing and think it meant something else. And so on her 83rd birthday, I basically sent a note to my brother saying, hey, praise God, she's 83, but we need to keep a watchful eye on her. And so what we did is we increased our calls. We increased our visits. We sort of like compared notes because she'd say one thing to one sibling and it was like completely different. And so it really gave us a good sense that, you know, she was sort of having a difficult time taking care of herself. You know, she was starting to struggle. So then we started to get involved with her doctor. So we started, you know, going to her doctor appointments. And fortunately, you know, they had done a lot of the pre-work for Alzheimer's. She had had an MRI. They had done this neuropsych evaluation. So that, you know, made it good. But, you know, so we're like, okay, if you know all of this is going on. So we were sort of thrilled, but, and I think they were thrilled because, you know, what do you do with a person who's on this road and you don't know anything about the family? You can't share information because of privacy. So we were both sort of happy that we were at this point. But, you know, we were sort of saying, well, if you know she has a problem, then why isn't she on any kind of medication? Because back then, it, you know, it was believed that if you would start, let's say, Aricept, that it would delay the progression of the illness. So we're like, okay, you know, why aren't you doing this? And it basically took us three tries, you know, to get her on Aricept. You know, we had to be her advocate, but they were giving us good reasons. You know, she's just, you know, in the MCI, mild cognitive impairment state. So, you know, we don't have, you know, she doesn't have Alzheimer's at that point, but we were able to work well. And it was a reputable hospital that we were working with. And, you know, it sounded good. But then as she declined, you know, we were always in contact with them. You know, this is going on now. This is going on now. And they eventually prescribed Aricept for her. So that's how we really got involved with Alzheimer's.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, it's nothing like the lived experience, is there, in, when you're dealing with something like Alzheimer's? I mean, how much you must have learned one a heck of a lot going through that procedure.
Well, going through that, and it was sort of good because each of us went to our Alzheimer's Association, you know, and, you know, got information. So we were each getting different things. And my brother in California worked at a hospital, so he had some resources there. So we were able to pull together a lot of information. But it's just hard when you're working full time. You know, we're remote from her. When things would happen, we didn't know if they really, really happened or, you know, it was her version of what happened. So it was hard. So we had to start, you know, going home more often, you know, to keep an eye on her and make sure everything was okay. But yeah, education is really key to understanding what's going on, understanding what resources may be available, and understand sort of like the progression of the illness.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a journey, isn't it?
It's a journey.
Call it, and depending on where you are on that journey. I mean, tell me a little bit about the caregiving principle.
Oh, okay. So, you know, I mentioned my mom, and we eventually had to move her to assisted living in her hometown in Cleveland. And then about a year later, you know, it wasn't going as well because it's not as structured as a memory care would be. And we decided to move her to Delaware. And I was thrilled about that. I love my mom. We did a lot of things together. But I was really concerned because over the past year, we had had a lot of sort of battles with mom. We want to do this. She wants to do that. And I'm like, you know, I want to bring her here. You know, this is probably the last phase of her life, but I don't want to have to deal with all of these, you know, battles. So I started thinking about what were some of the issues we had. And it really came down to the fact that, you know, a lot of times when you think about needs of a person, you're thinking about the activities of daily living, you know. But my mom, her needs were much higher than that. You know, her needs encompass the total person. So in the caregiving principle, I define needs as by Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So she had a need for those physical things, eating, bathing, dressing, but she also had a need for safety. She had a need for social. She had a need for self-esteem. That was one that just kept coming up all the time. And a need for self-actualization, basically. You know, I can do things for myself. I want to do as much as I can. So that's how it sort of got started, you know, and it evolved over time. But basically, the caregiving principle basically says the needs of the loved one that you're caring for minus the needs that they can provide for themselves gives you what the caregiver really has to do. It's a framework. Whatever the loved one can't do, you're going to have to fill in there. And so, you know, you have to prepare for that. So over in the beginning, maybe it's just oversight. You know, you just, you know, keep an eye on her finances or his finances. You know, maybe it's minor stuff, but over time, that's going to grow. Not only because of the Alzheimer's, but because of age. You know, if your loved one's 80, my mother was 83 when we started this. You know, there's other things that take place. You know, she had a knee replacement, you know, cataracts, all of these other things are going on at the same time. And so, you know, that's the caregiving principle. So the needs are defined based on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And I'll give you an example of how the caregiving principle helped me. I was at my mother's memory care. And I said, hey, you know, I stopped by after work. And I said, I'm going to the mall. You know, I'll see you tomorrow or I'll see you later in the week. And my mother said, well, I want to go. And I was sort of taken aback by that because she's never asked to do that. I'm like, great, let's go to the mall. So, you know, I freshened her up and got her shoes on, brushed her teeth, all of that kind of stuff. And we walked out the door. And the minute that door closed, she said, I don't want to go. I'm like, Mom, no. And she was trying to get back into her memory care. And I knew at that time, safety was an important part for her. She felt comfortable. It's what I call a sense of security, being in that memory care. So knowing, having the principal at that point, I said, well, we're not going to be gone long. We're coming right back. I only have one item to pick up. I'm doing all of these things to try to get her out because she did have an interest in going. But she wouldn't go. But where it really helped was I knew why she didn't want to go. I didn't get upset. I could have been at the mall probably on my way home the time that I spent. But I was completely fine with that because I knew at that moment in time, she needed the safety and security of her memory care.
The station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer. Part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with me. And if we go someplace to dance, I know that there's a chance you won't be leaving with me. Then afterwards we drop into a quiet little place and have a drink or two. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I can see it in your eyes that you despise the same old lines you heard the night before. And though it's just a line to you, for me it's true, it never seemed so right before. I practice every day to find some clever lines to say to make the meaning come true. Then I think I'll wait until the evening gets late and I'm alone with you. The time is right, your perfume fills my head, the stars get red and all the night's so blue. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love.
Secret Sisters and Something Stupid here on UK Health Radio, where shortly you'll be able to hear all our shows, including The D Word, in podcast format, available on all major podcast platforms. So keep an eye on the website at www.ughealthradio.com for more news. I'm chatting to my guest, Carol B. Amos, about the caregiving principle.
So, it's, you know, a lot of time is perspective. It's understanding, you know, understanding what they can't always express. You know, I knew why she couldn't leave. And the interesting thing about memory care is when those doors lock, they lock. I mean, you can sort of tell that you're leaving. And the minute that, you know, maybe I should have held the door and just sort of helped it close a little more gently. But, you know, she needed the safety and security of her memory care at that time. You know, it was in the afternoon. It was, you know, near sundowning time too. Maybe if it had been in the morning, maybe she would have, you know, gone with me. But at that time, that's what she needed. So, you know, she was content, you know, so I was content as well. So that's the caregiving principle. It talks about the needs. The second component talks about the needs that they can fill on their own. So that's based on their cognitive ability, how the Alzheimer's is affecting them. So, you know, I always recommend that make sure you get, you know, a good evaluation because, you know, here in the United States, you know, after talking to people, there have been a lot of misdiagnoses going on. You know, people diagnosed with Alzheimer's and they really don't have Alzheimer's. It may be depression or medication or overload. So, you know, making sure that they get the full workup. And that's why we felt, you know, comfortable with her hospital because they had gone through and done all of the different tests that really confirmed that it was, MCI and not something else. So making sure you get a good evaluation, you know, don't just, in the United States, we have what's called primary care physicians, but don't just rely on a primary care physician. That should be your first stop, but not your last stop. And then you want to, you know, go to the specialist. And sometimes it can be sort of difficult and hard because they want to run a whole lot of different tests. And, you know, and really, as a caregiver, you just have to be patient, because in a way you're hoping it's not Alzheimer's. You're hoping it is something else that's more treatable. So, you know, just be patient. But you also have to look at their physical ability. You know, that impacts their ability to take care of themselves. So in our mother's case, my brothers, and I must say, my brothers and I worked very well together. You know, we did everything as a team. You know, every decision we made, we would all put our different thoughts together and then come out with, this is what we're going to do. And then we would support it wholeheartedly. And I really, really appreciated having that team, my circle of support. So we would look at anything that they recommended and say, hey, well, will this help her? So her having knee surgery, you know, her knees were basically, I mean, ready to give out on her, both of them. So we had one done, and then we monitored the other knee once she moved to Delaware, and we didn't have to do additional surgery. But, you know, when you think about it, it helps you to walk. It gives you you know, allows you to exercise. So even though it's difficult doing, having a loved one with Alzheimer's in a hospital, and in my mother's case, you know, that first night, she actually got up out of the bed. They found her on the side of the bed. They don't think she walked on it, but I'm like, oh, you know, because of the confusion. She didn't really know what was going on, what was happening. And I'm like, oh no, now I have to spend the night here to make sure she doesn't get up and mess her knee up. And so that's what I had to do. But then the next night they provided what they call was really an aid to just be with her to prevent that from happening. And I didn't know that was available because I was already to spend another night at the hospital. So it's not easy having these surgeries. You know, she needed to have cataract surgery. You know, that's going to help her see. So that's going to help her be able to take care of herself. So every little procedure you sort of have to look at and sort of say, you know, is the view worth the climb? What's the benefit of that? And then if there's no good benefit, like in some cases, she had some like lung issues. There were like some spots on her lung. It wasn't cancer. You know, one doctor said she needs to, you know, we're going to do a scan every 6 months. So that means, you know, taking her out of memory care, going somewhere to get the scan. So we changed doctors. And the new doctor said, she's not going to die from this. Why are we doing scans every 6 months? You know, you know, she basically sort of said what was going to happen, and whatever's there is not going to grow to any point, you know, where it's going to become an issue. And so you really have to look at not just their cognitive ability, but also their physical ability, so that, because what you really want to do is maximize their ability to take care of themselves. Because that's all part of, you know, self-esteem, being able to do things for yourself, being able to engage in social activities, you know, going to, you know, going out for a rest to eat in a restaurant and things like that. So that's the second component. And then really the third component really is sort of like the framework for the caregiver's role and, you know, what the loved one can't do. You know, the caregiver has to do, and it's a lot of work. It's a very stressful role. And in our case with our mother, she was in memory care. So there were a lot of things we didn't have to do because her caregivers were doing it. But that's what every caregiver needs to do, get some people so that it doesn't all fall on one person. Because that time frame, sort of like from beginning to end, can be 10 or 20 years. And what happens is the increase in care needed is sort of gradual. So like in the beginning, you may bring your father into the house and, you know, after meals, he helps with doing the dishes. But then over time, well, he's not really cleaning the dishes very well, or he's breaking dishes. So now he's no longer helping with that. And then, you know, now you have to, you know, cut up his food for him. And now there's like more food on the floor and under his, you know, under his chair. And now you have to, instead of washing the floor once a week, now it's twice a week you have to mop the floor. So it's sort of a gradual thing. And every little one thing isn't a big thing, but when you put them all together, you know, what you have to do more with helping them get dressed, what you have to do more helping them get groomed, all of these little things really over time. And I think that's where caregivers get sort of don't realize that it's happening. You know, I'm doing a lot for dad or for mom, because it's, you know, you're doing a little more every week, but it's just a little. So it's like, so what? I have to cut up his food. That's a minor thing, but you also need to put the toothpaste on his toothbrush. You need to, you know, it snowballs. So caregivers really have to realize that it's a stressful job. You know, the physical part can be stressful, but the emotional part can even be more stressful. And that's why, you know, I tell caregivers, you really need to take care of yourself, making sure you get help. It may mean getting more family members. It may mean getting a caregiver in the home. It may mean putting your loved one in a facility. And there's advantages to that, because when you're spending time with your loved one, you're not worried so much about the eating and getting dressed and all of that. You're spending more quality time with your loved one. But you have to spend the time to find the right place. Not every place is going to, you know, give your loved one the care and respect and everything that they need.
Between me and you.
That really is a great album from Aaron McDonald called Too Many Days Like Saturday Night, and that track was asking a whole lot of this heart. As always, we'd love to hear from you here on The D Word. You can find us on social media at Radio DDW on Twitter, the Radio DDW Facebook page, or by email to tdwradio@gmail.com. My guest this week is Carol B. Amos, and we're talking about the caregiving principle, which looks at the full length of the Alzheimer's journey, including the decline in cognitive function over time.
You know, part of the caregiving principle, when it that second component, when it talks about their ability to take care of themselves, you know they're going to decline over a period of time. They're going to decline. And so you have to prepare for that next step. You can't wait till you need a care home to do something. And at least in the United States, a lot of them have waiting lists. You just can't say, hey, I need a, and it's even worse with caregivers here in the United States. You know, you want someone to come in the home for 4 hours a day for four days a week or whatever. You're on a waiting list for that nowadays. So you have to start thinking about this in advance. So that was one thing that helped us, is when we decided mom shouldn't be at home by herself, we moved her to assisted living. And my brother had visited a place 6 months earlier. So we already had a place he liked, and you know, we looked at it and it looked like, hey, this is great. It's sort of like in her same neighborhood, and she could probably continue some of the things that she was doing. And she was familiar with the area. So, you know, it really made a stressful time less stressful, because we had to sell the house, sell the car, you know, get her moved in, you know, all the, you know, there's tests you have to do, you know, TB tests and stuff to get her, you know, into the facility. She had long-term care insurance, which helped, but, you know, there's a process you have to go through with that. And, you know, like emptying out a house that she had been in for, I don't know, 20 something years, her and my father, you know, that wasn't easy, and we weren't living there. So if we really had to spend a lot of time finding assisted living for her, that would have just made a stressful time even more stressful.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, there is so much reliance on education there, isn't there? And you know, as a caregiver, almost kind of learning to ask the right questions of the other medical professionals as well. Mm-hmm. And I know you've kind of summed up the story in the book that you wrote, Hope for the Alzheimer's Journey, which kind of takes people through that process that obviously you had to go through with your brothers.
You have to, it is a journey, and you know, the hope in the book stands for, you know, it's an acronym. The H stands for help. You know, caregivers have to reach out for help. A lot of caregivers will think, you know, the behavior that they see in their loved one is only my loved one does that, but a lot of people are doing the same thing. But until you talk to other people, it's hard to realize that you're not the only one going through this. So reaching out to others for help for your loved one, and also help for yourself, you know, a support group where you can talk to other caregivers. The O stands for organization, being able to keep all of these balls moving at the same time. And one of the best tools that I used was what I call her doctor sheet, because she had a lot of, you know, different things that she was going to the doctor. So it was one page, and my brothers had a copy of it too. The doctors, you know, their hours, where they were located. And it was all in one place. And we ended up using it because my brother said, when I come to visit, you know, I'll take her to some of her doctor appointments. So we were able to sort of use it to say, well, she sees this doctor twice a year. She sees this one once a year. We were able to really come out with a schedule. So, you know, okay, I'm going to be there in a month on a, you know, Thursday and a Friday. So, you know, make appointments for her and I'll take her. And that really reduced my load, you know, especially on the appointments that required me to either take a half day off from work or, you know, things that were like one of her appointments was up in Philadelphia, which is about 30, 40 miles away. So that really helped. But, you know, getting organized and having all of that. And I put all of her information in one of those plastic tote bins. So everything dealing with my mother, because, you know, you lose a script, you know, to get a test done, you lose this, and it could just drive you crazy. So, you know, getting organized is key. And P is preparation, sort of being ready for the next phase of the journey, whether it's a facility or whether it's getting more help. But it's also, you know, P is really important for anything you need to do with your loved one. So if you want to take your loved one to a social outing or even to a restaurant, you sort of have to prepare. Like one of the things I really wanted to take my mother to and I never did was the Philadelphia Flower Show. You know, but I just thought it was just too much walking and it's, you know, but I sort of went through the process of thinking what it would look like. You know, you had to park one place and you take a bus to the, you know, and I said, well, maybe if I had another person, it would help. But, you know, for any activity, you really have to think about, you know, you have to sort of prepare, you know, how is she going to receive it? You know, is this too much for her? And I thought it would be. But then you look at other activities, like we would take her to ball games, you know, minor league baseball games, which was sort of family oriented and you could sort of go. And if you didn't stay for the whole thing, you know, it's fine. So you still have to sort of plan out, you know, okay, how far is she going to be able to walk there? And what, you know, will she be okay? So you're thinking about really, you know, from a social and a self-esteem, all of those things, you know, thinking about her total needs as you're making some of those decisions on even on things like social activities.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer, life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Don't
Such a great voice, Alison Krauss and Losing You. Carol B. Amos is this week's guest, and it's clear that in her work on the caregiving principle, you really need a whole rounded view of the person being cared for.
And it makes them feel better. I mean, you're trying to maximize, you know, sort of like their ability. You know, you're trying to make it comfortable for them to be who they are. You know, you want the... You know, a lot of people sort of mourn the loss of, you know, I've lost this and my mom, and I've lost this and she, but, you know, you can bring, you know, it was interesting, you know, some of that would come back, you know, if you sort of nurture, you know, do the right nurturing and, you know, you would see things like one of her friends would call and say, you know, I talked to your mom today and it was like old times, you know, it was just like, you know, like nothing was wrong with her. So, you know, it's not lost, it's just sort of inside there, and what you have to do is try to pull it out, you know, in different kinds of ways. And I would do things like when I would go to visit her, I'd say something, tell myself, and I don't know if I ever really accomplished this, but I'd say, I'm gonna make her laugh today. You know, I don't know how I'm gonna do it, but I'm just gonna, you know, laughter is good for the soul, you know, I'm gonna try to do something, you know, to make her laugh. And you know, sometimes I did, probably sometimes I didn't, you know, you get sidetracked, but you just sort of, you know, the visits were sort of like her time, you know, her time. And I let her sort of like call the shots on what she wanted to talk about or what she wanted to do. So I was definitely in her world then.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's important to concentrate on what someone can still achieve, mm-hmm. what they can't. Because it kind of highlights the condition. Whereas if you concentrate on what they can do,
right,
then you know, you're demonstrating, that can make a lot of difference.
Right. And in my in the book, I talk about three things to sort of maximize their ability. I talk about sort of having a routine, you know, something they feel comfortable with. And even when, you know, we'd go out to dinner, we would go out the same time she would normally have dinner at her facility. We tried to work, you know, doctor's appointments sort of around her routine, you know, sort of being in, you know, trying to minimize any anxiety that they might have, you know. And there's, you know, a lot of ways you can do that, you know, sort of living in their world. And then the other one is really trying to engage them in stimulating activities. So, you know, like sometimes, you know, just going to a doctor's appointment, I'd say, okay, we're looking for this address, 1421 Main Street, you know. And, you know, I'd have her saying, oh, no, we're at 1209 right now. We're getting close, you know, and it engaged her, you know. Okay, here, okay, we're here. And, okay, let's go inside. Oh, we need to find what we would go to the directory. You know, okay, we're looking for Dr. Smith, you know. And okay, Dr. Smith is in room 209. Okay, now if we were late, we weren't going through all of that. If we were late for the appointment, but you know, okay, let's find the elevator. So you know, just trying to, you know, constantly engage, you know, your loved one is really critical as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, I read some of the reviews of your book, And the one I liked most was the person that said, "This book is insightful, educational, but most of all, inspirational," which I think was a really good way of summing up the book. And also, I mean, people write books for various reasons. And on your website, I love the quote that says, "Carol's hope and prayer is a cure will soon be found and a book will no longer be needed."
Definitely. Definitely. And actually, when I my publisher did this like red carpet event for new authors when our books came out, and we got to say a few things, but I basically said, "Hey, I want this book to become obsolete. You know, I don't want anyone to go through what we have gone through." And so, you know, that's the key. You know, involved with the Alzheimer's Association. I do care and support. I'm an advocate. So I'm advocating different Alzheimer's issues. You know, I'm an advocate to our Senator Christopher Coons of Delaware. You have to work on all sides of things. I've done fundraisers. I did a fundraiser for the book on The Longest Day. We need, you know, it's not a U.S. issue. It's a worldwide issue, and we need a solution. And, you know, some of the things that Lindsay, you know, talked about, you know, that's a great first step, you know, the Bredesen protocol, because, you know, we're bombarding ourselves with toxins, you know, a lot of the toxins out there. It's interesting because, you know, from a United States perspective, you know, I wouldn't think that the United Kingdom have more restrictions on things than we do in the U.S., but it's like that. But until you become educated, and yeah, the E in the book, in the HOPE acronym is education. So, it's just learning about all of the different things can impact brain health.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, time's drawing us to a close. But I think also, you know, along with all of that, we need more inspirational people like you as well. And I think your mum would be really proud of, you know, what you've achieved.
Yeah, I think because I initially was like, this is her story. You know, should I publicize her story? But, you know, my mom was a person. She was active in her church. She was a deaconess. She was always helping people. And that's where I get my inspiration from, you know, from God and from her. But I, you know, when I was debating, you know, even at the last minute, do I want to do this? Is this something mom would want me to do? And the answer was yes. You know, she would want me to be able to help people. And a lot of dealing with this is, you know, it's a mindset. You just have to, you have to embrace your loved one and the disease. You can't really separate them. I would be out with my mom sometimes and someone would walk by and they were looking different, and you can define different however you want. And I'm like, mom. And a lot of times I would try to sort of hide the person from my mom because I didn't want her to say something that was going to embarrass that person or me, you know. But you just basically have to say, you know, it is what it is. I'm going to embrace her. I may not like her behaviors or some of her comments, but she's my mom, and I'm in it. I'm going to embrace all of her.
Yeah, I think that's a great sentiment. And, you know, to pinch a review of your book, I think it's been very inspirational talking to you. Thank you so much, Carol, for being my guest on The D Word.
Oh, well, I'm really honored getting my book and getting into the United Kingdom. I haven't been doing a lot, you know, of publicity during this COVID period. But, you know, dementia doesn't take a break. You know, the number of cases continue to grow. And, you know, I was trying to be active during National Family Caregivers Month and Alzheimer's Awareness Month, because it doesn't take a break, you know. So, yeah, I just, you know, wish the very best for all of your listeners And the key is to really take care of yourself. And in my book, I do these personal reflections. And one of them talked about my mom in the evening would sort of like push me out of the room. Go home, go home. I want you to get home safe because I would be lost without you. And so caregivers, you have to take care of yourself so that your loved one won't be lost without you. So just, you know, sometimes you have to put your needs, I talk about needs in the caregiving principle, but sometimes you have to put your needs above the needs of your loved one because you have to take care of yourself.
That's a great message. And I think the perfect way to end. Thank you, Carol. You've become a friend of the D Word now. Hopefully we can keep in touch. And
definitely.
So I say to all the people that are doing great work, please keep on doing what you're doing.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much.
My thanks to Carol, and if you'd like to find out more about the caregiving principle, then have a look at the website carolbamos.com. Well, it's all for the first show of 2023. Thanks and a very happy new year to Angela, our production assistant. And next week, I'm going to be meeting up again with Dr. Marvin Berman, who's going to be talking about the latest developments in light therapy. So until then, thanks for listening and take care now.